Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Michael and Patty podcast covering Prince Edward Island real estate and everything PEI, bringing you our thousands of transactions experience and over, 40 years?
Over 40 years, I believe.
In the PEI real estate business. It's a beautiful day on the island if you're a duck. It's been raining for about a week, and we're just waiting for winter. Getting those snow tires on this week. You're doing the same thing, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm also getting my snow tires on this week.
Turmoil in the industry is what I named this first little portion. Have you noticed? We get bulletins from the Prince Edward Island Real Estate Association telling us any new members, members that have left, members that have transferred from one firm to the next, brokerages that have folded. And typically we get this on a monthly basis, and I'm sure you read every one of those with the anticipation to see what's happening with the membership.
That's actually one of my email newsletters that I look forward to, if I must admit that, to see what's going on and where is everybody situated today.
So they come out monthly, and then a week later, I get another one, which I thought was really odd because the first one had enough stuff on it. And then I get another one a week later, and at the top, it says, effective November 15th, the member update will be sent out weekly. To me, I thought, turmoil in the industry. So what you see in the industry now is everything has cycles. Real estate has cycles, and what you're finding is we're coming to the end of a crazy, crazy time after COVID. And what happened is when things became crazy, everyone and their brother got their real estate license, and that's why we went from, according to our previous podcast, a couple hundred up to over 500 or around 500 agents. So the brokerage is sort of turned into, what would you call it, sort of a puppy mill for new agents.
Yeah, and it's not just only new agents coming in. As a result of the pandemic, we ended up seeing an extreme increase in the number of brokerages, private boutique brokerages, everyone feeling like this is my opportunity to capitalize on the market. I'll have five top producing or 20 top producing agents, and I will become a millionaire in the business. And it's interesting what you said when you started, that companies coming out. So for years, we were seeing so many new brokerages opening up. And yeah, we're starting to see them close now. There's just no money to be made.
And you've seen a lot of brokerages or a number of them that had 12 or 14 agents that now have 60 or 80, or some of them, it seems to be a contest of how many agents they can fit onto a couple pages in a real estate book.
Yeah, like who has the bigger brokerage? It's, yeah.
Who has more people doing nothing?
Yes.
Because the sales aren't indicative of how many agents you have. You could have the most successful firm in your province or state with five or six top producers. So I've seen. So what I'm seeing, and I don't know about you, is now I'm seeing all these advertisements for get your training, sign up for training. Even our own association, which I feel is a complete conflict of interest, is now soliciting commercial vendors to sell us their courses. The brands are now sending out, oh, new training, we've got approved training. And I think that is the result of, and you're a broker, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, that's all your agents coming up to you saying, we need more training, we're not making any more money, or we're making any money, because they don't have any training. But the fact is, and maybe we'll cover this next, is you shouldn't have to, or you don't have to rely on your broker for really good training.
When you get into the industry, and I always recommend, and it's not even if you are in the industry and you're not satisfied or pleased with where you're at, you really should be much the same as a listing agent and a buyer's agent should have a presentation. A brokerage should have a presentation. What are they offering? Aside from whatever, you know, maybe an attractive split, what are you not getting as a result of this more attractive split? And that's what I believe agents coming into the business or that are in the business should be looking for. Education, if the split is indicative and the brokerage promises this is the training, ask a little bit more about the training. What kind of training can I expect to receive? But if you are just holding your license, the brokerage is the umbrella, and you're on your own, you've got an 80-20 or 90-10 split, well, you get what you pay for. You're not really paying for anything, so you're not going to really receive anything in return.
But I, as an agent, do I need to rely on my broker for education, or can I seek out a third party? And are those third parties better, worse?
Well, Michael,
or the
as,
same?
Well, as you know, you and I, when I used to be with Century 21, we sought out additional training from third parties, which ended up excelling my business because of all this education that's available. There is no shortage of, you know, associations and organizations that provide top quality. Now, you have to make sure you vet them out, and it's not just a maybe a general overview. You really want someone that dives deep and really gives you some of the psychology behind, gives you some tools. You walk away with something of real value. But there are so much training. There's YouTube videos. There has to be a level when you get into business that you own your business and you own your education and you own where you're at. If you're not making money, that's not always the brokerage's fault. What are you doing and not doing on a day-to-day basis to try to excel your business?
So the reason I'm getting into this is the first update I got, we've got two new members and three that have left. So the ratio of left to new is higher. And then a week later, I get another update and we got one new and three left. So it's a 3-to-1 ratio here. But then you've got a few of them that transferred in the brokerage that's closed. The people that have transferred is typically either personality conflict, you know, they're in a toxic environment at the brokerage, or more likely in most cases would be because they're looking for that rainbow. They're looking for that brokerage that's going to give them all the wisdom, knowledge, experience, and leads that they didn't get elsewhere.
Yeah, much the same as they're looking for a miracle agent, a seller to sell their property. They're looking for a miracle brokerage to help them excel and succeed in the business.
So how does this help a potential listener if they're looking for someone to sell or someone to buy a house through?
They need to be very mindful of the training, the credentials. I know, and I try not to put, I put a few and sometimes I'll rotate them, but the accreditations that I have, and I do let my clients that it's applicable. I'm not going to tell a seller that I have my ABR, which is a buyer's representative accreditation, but they should have credentials to do the business. The other thing that they should have is how many transactions have they done? How the more transactions, and I mean, why this is important to our listeners, and if you're a buyer or seller, is they will be able to foresee perhaps problems or issues before they become a problem or issue, whereas a new agent is not going to see it. And if they don't have the support from their brokerage, at the end of the day, they're on their own. And now you're being left to sea without a raft because your agent isn't trained to be able to get you out of some of the bad water areas and issues that you might end up getting into in real estate.
So look for someone with credentials, experience, and as we've defined in the past, look for an expert, and that's someone that's handled 1,000 transactions and has 10,000 hours of experience in PEI real estate, not real estate somewhere else, because our market is different, just like other markets are different from the PEI market. Moving on to our funny story portion of the show.
Well, it kind of segues from what we were just talking about, too. And our listeners, and we want to thank every single person that is out tuning in, catching our podcast and educating themselves, because I am working with a client and I've had a few now that are our listeners. And as a result of the, and I almost see this like they're doing their homework, Michael. They're listening to our podcast, they're educating and preparing themselves. And now while I'm walking through the process, which I have a wonderful client that I've been working with, you know, for the last month or so, but this week we're actually looking at properties and working on securing a property sale for her, is she's pointing out to me, based on the content that is in our podcast, I remember you said this in the podcast, I need to do this. And I remember you said in the podcast that, how much is the deposit? So they're prepared. They're far more educated as a result, which is making my job a lot easier. And you know what? I won't miss anything. They're better informed. It makes for such a better real estate experience, whether it's buying or selling, just by tuning in and educating yourself with all the information that we share.
So if you do know anyone buying or selling real estate, even if it's in another province, because it's all basically the same system, send them this podcast. And next, so last week you were Dancing with the Stars, and the video link was in the description last week if anyone wants to see Patty on the stage. And this week you were practicing staying safe. Would that be a good way to put it? Taking a safety course for real estate agents, because some of them have ended up dead, unfortunately, even in Canada.
I took a realtor safety course, which is exactly what it's called. I will do a little plug for Rob and Beth Andrus. Rob is a realtor, and Beth, his lovely wife, unfortunately, was a victim of an assault. This very powerful duo knows their business. Now, they are going across Canada, and I was so shocked. It was a six-hour training course that I had attended, and I'll give you a little overview. This six-hour training course, what they cover is violence prevention and safety, learn to change the outcome before it happens, identify risk factors, understanding the psychology of predators that target realtors and why. It was so much more than sitting there maybe with padded gear on and learning how to fight back. In fact, there was really fighting.
Did you get the guy with the outfit on with all the pads and get to beat the crap out of him?
There's so much more to safety. It's not just your physical safety. It's your online safety. It's your bank account safety. Beth and Rob got into everything. They provided apps and tools and must-have things that we as realtors should have in our business. So if you didn't attend, and here's my disappointment, the turnout here for PEI was so low, and here the content was so invaluable. I'm still talking about it every single day, and I attended last Thursday, and I'm actually doing some things as part of my agent's Christmas gifts to help protect and keep them safe.
Is that why you bought a bunch of handguns?
That's not what it is. It is so important as realtors that we are dialed in and we understand. The disappointing part for me is I had no idea how much violence, how dangerous our job is on a day-to-day basis. Do not assume we're just walking keys, dressing up nice and showing houses. There are some really serious situations and assaults that have happened in Canada. I'm not even talking the U.S., Michael. In Canada, that I'm not going to share here. If you are a realtor, take their course, reach out to them, please.
Or even if you're not, it's a good idea to take a safety course.
Yeah, this safety course is better than any safety course that I have taken in the past. They do have, so look them up again, Realtor Safety, Beth and Rob Andrus. I highly recommend. They are going to give you the one tool that a realtor must have in order to safely show a property, and it might just save your life.
Good advice. Moving on, this time of the year, this is November, heading into the winter. What's the silliest idea you hear pretty well on a weekly basis?
Oh, at this time of year, being November, many are saying they want to take their property off the market because they have the holidays coming. They don't want to have to deal with, you know, showings and traffic coming in and out. They just want their downtime, and they feel that no one's out there looking anyways for real estate. So it just makes sense in their head.
What if it's land?
Well, land seems kind of silly to take it off.
That's what I said to this one particular seller, because his agent gave him three options: lower the price, bring it on in the spring, or keep it on as it sat. And then later he told me he regretted mentioning taking it off until the spring, because I said to him, he was a newer agent, I said, there's a lot of people looking for properties from fall to spring. And a lot of times, if you look at the stats, they end up getting more money for those properties as owners, landowners, and homeowners. It may take longer to sell because less people are looking, but there's always people looking. The problem with relisting in the spring when the grass is green, and Patty and I get a million phone calls for people looking to list their houses and land, is now you have 10 million other competitors, which naturally supply and demand is going to drive the price down. Leave the property on until it sells. Do not take it off. You're just going to turn what could be a 1 or 2 or 3 year journey in the land or home selling process into 12 years. And again, we've done studies on that, and we used to carry them with us because Murphy's Law says, the moment you take that property off the market, someone's going to be looking for that exact property. Wouldn't you agree?
I completely agree. And I do, if I can say, just for our listeners who are considering taking their property off the market, here's what happens over the holidays. Those who celebrate Christmas, as soon as they're finished, their bellies are full, the presents are open, they're done with their family. They may have to still stay there for a couple more hours. They start unplugging and they start surfing realtor.ca. Why? Because they start dreaming about next year's summer vacation. Where can I go? I want to set things up. And that is when I find I'm really busy over the Christmas holidays with people now starting to look for cottage, residential, and land.
On the way here, we drove by a FSBO, which stands for Sale by Owner. And Patty brought up it's kind of a sadistic, sad story about a for sale by owner. Typically, people that are trying to sell their homes on their own, the real estate agents don't want anything to do with them because of various different reasons. But in this particular case, Patty took it upon herself to write an offer and represent a buyer on a for sale by owner. And how did that turn out?
Well, it didn't turn out very well for my buyer, and it made for a very uncomfortable situation for me. I did, just to be clear, had my client under a buyer's agreement. We did find a property. Every property that my buyer client seems to have been interested in were private sale homes. We did secure a contract. We did end up removing all our conditions. Fast forward to closing day now. Now, title search is done, financing's in order. I don't know if the funds were already with the lawyer's office and trust, but we are ready to go. My client's content were inside of a truck on its way from Ottawa to PEI. I show up first thing in the morning, which is typically when I do my final walkthrough, and I knock on the door because I notice there's vehicles in the driveway. There's still stuff laying around. I knock on the door. The seller opens up the door.
So just, if I may interrupt you for a second, so you're selling houses that don't have doorbells?
I guess not.
You need to step up.
I remember knocking on the door, and the seller opens the door, and I look quickly beyond, and this seller did not pack. I had my client on the phone. I said, if you don't mind, because I could feel there was some kind of tense situation. So I asked if I could call him right back, because I didn't want to cause any problems with this closing. I informed the seller, hi, I am, you know, my client's realtor. I'm here to do the final walkthrough as per our contract agreement, and because today is closing. The seller looked at me and he proceeded to say, I'm not selling. And I just was a little taken back because I'd not experienced this and I have not to this day again. But he said, I'm not selling. And I said, so I tried to gently explain to him, today is closing. You were expected to be removed from the property. My client's contents, without putting too much stress on him, I said, my client has the expectation he is moving in today to the property. He had said, I'm not selling. He said, come on in. We'll talk. Just you're out, you know, from, because it was cold and it was in the winter season. I go inside this house and sure enough, this man has not packed anything. He was not moving. I had to go out. He asked me to get out of his house. I had to call my client. He was so upset. And I said, look, I'll tell him the same thing I told the seller inside. I said, please contact your lawyer because I didn't want to escalate the situation. That did not close. And yes, the seller was in breach of contract. Yes, my client ended up sabotaging. He is just now, and this happened like 5-6 years ago, just starting now to look for a property on PEI again. As a result of—
Is he looking for FSBOs?
No, he actually said he will not ever purchase a private sale property again because of the lack of control and professionalism by not having representation from a realtor to walk the parties through and to also protect the buyer. Because if there was a realtor involved representing the seller, we probably would have been able to have circumvented this. But because there was no representation and the seller just thought he could do anything that he wanted, it made such a bad situation. The costs, yes, he was being sued, but that's all side stuff. So just please, when they say buyers beware, there's so many layers to that buyers beware.
I've never shown it for sale by owner, and I never will.
Okay.
Well, they're just basically telling us they don't respect what we do. Why would I waste my time showing a property for someone that doesn't respect their industry?
In their defense, they may have had a bad experience. So please, it's like anything in life. please do not put us all under the same, you know, blanket and assume we're all the same. If you had a bad experience, fine. If you're just a know-it-all, well, then you are who you are. But there are reasons.
It probably relates back to our no education paragraph in the beginning, her point, looking at our sheet here. Are you finding, I'm getting people calling me now saying, well, there's no signs on the property, particularly as land. Are you finding that is becoming more commonplace as people use the Realtor.ca app and are able to map what is for sale around them and use GPSs with the mapping utilities that are online to identify where properties are? I find that agents are not putting up signs. The PEI being an island, we get a lot of high winds. It's hard to keep these signs up as well. And you're not going to take a four-hour drive every time, you know, you get a windstorm to check out a sign.
And in some areas of PEI, I'm just going to say, some communities do not like seeing realtor signs because they don't want the increased traffic. They don't want people up there. I don't know if they think by removing the sign, people can't see it. It's still on the web. But signs get taken down. Some communities are just, I've had these listings where probably at least every couple weeks my sign would disappear. And there's no way that sign would have disappeared without being physically removed.
Didn't we hear from somebody that runs a gun range that people love to use the realtor signs for target practice?
I have heard that.
So the bottom line is use the realtor.ca app. Don't use addresses. Use GPS coordinates. Don't use your phone as a GPS. Use an actual GPS. And things will go smoothly when you're looking for property. Question that you brought up, and this has been something we've been listening to for many, 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 many years because of IRAC, Island Regulatory Appeals Commission. Can Americans buy a property on PEI? And that shouldn't be limited to Americans. It should be limited to non-island residents, including Canadian residents.
Yes, non-Canadians can purchase property in Canada. Because apparently it's one of the top, I believe on one stat, it was 1,270% increase on people.
Are you talking about the latest presidential election? So the increases of people searching for moving to Canada has increased anywhere between 1,273% to over 5,000%, depending on which talk show host you get your news from.
Yes. And that just lets us know that people are questioning, can I move to Canada? Is that an option? Yes, you can move to Canada. We do have the prohibition. So there's amalgamated areas. I'm not going to get into it, Michael. All I'm saying is there are areas that, depending on where you're looking, yes, you do need to be mindful of that. So it's not like every property is fair game for non-Canadians. However, we have a secondary level or layer of protection, which is our Land Protection Act, which is what you had said, IRAC, Michael. There's a little bit of information. I do have a few American clients that have been reaching out to me asking me this exact question. So I do have maps that show the areas that a non-Canadian can not purchase in, and a list of, you know, frequently asked questions to satisfy or hopefully answer any questions or questions they didn't know they had. And now they're that much more educated in them.
So they can buy property here. They may have to go through IRAC if it's over 165 feet or 5 acres of land. You can find out more about that IRAC, irac.pe.ca. We don't do the immigration portion of it. Legally, from what I understand, you can live here for 6 months less a day than you have to go back for so many hours. That's something you probably want to talk to an immigration lawyer about, but we welcome you aboard. Bring a winter jacket.
Yes.
You have a note here referring to FINTRAC, F-I-N-T-R-A-C.
Yes. I am finding that clients, the public, doesn't understand why their realtor is asking for, you know, their driver's license or their passport. If they're a Canadian citizen, most people have a driver's license or a permanent residency card. We need to ask for your ID information to satisfy, it's a legal requirement, FINTRAC. FINTRAC stands for Financial Transactions and Reports Analysis Center of Canada. It is the law. We have to. I have had an agent in my office who had asked for the driver's license. Now, it should be done in person to properly identify a person, which is why I try to get it while I'm with my clients or at closing day. Because if not, then you have to get a mandatory identifier, which is a whole other thing. But they're asking because it's a legal requirement. One of the agents in my office, he had asked, and the client had gone to their lawyer and had said, this realtor is asking for my ID. Do I have to give it to them? And the lawyer told them, no, you do not have to release your ID information. So then I had to get involved. We do have brochures, packages. I sent my clients the website. If they do question it, I am not going to do anything with your ID. I understand there's massive concerns with regards to, you know, people trying to assume your identity. I'll just give you my take. The reason we're taking your ID is because it's a proof you are associated with the property. There's been an exchange of money, or you are going to be the new owner, or you are the seller of the property. The ID information stays in the brokerage's office in a locked cabinet for 5 years. Should the property not come up for investigation in those 5 years, each brokerage has a responsibility to shred and remove that information. So it is necessary. Please don't assume if your realtor is just trying to take your ID because they want to assume your identity. It is the law. We have to ask for that.
Do you post this on your Instagram page?
No, I haven't. Why do you say that?
Just to be funny. Would funny. FinTrack was introduced to prevent money laundering. Whether or not it's been successful at that, you can research that on your own. And what are you pointing at?
Well, I was just saying it was founded in 2000. That's when this became a requirement.
So there you go. Including contents with a property, particularly with cottages. Are you against that or really against that? Because you're removing your leverage tool, because now all people can do is bargain on the price. Whereas I can use the contents as a lever to get a full price offer or better. And on top of that, I'll get a pre-inspection done as well. That way we know what we're dealing with, so they can't use that as a lever. So I'm removing both levers there. And at the end of the day, if you don't want the contents, we can just put it in the counteroffer that they take the contents, or you can auction them off, donate them, or put them on Kijiji.
I do not like having contents included in. I am okay if I see, if I'm representing a buyer and I see that there is the potential to purchase turnkey. However, I do not want a listing to compromise my buyer client's ability to get financing, because banks, lenders do not finance couches and furniture. So now they're going to send out an appraiser to appraise that property, determine how much of this purchase price is the property and how much is it consisting of the contents. So you just sabotaged that buyer getting that full price financing. I do agree 100% with everything that you said, Michael, but there is that other component and element. So I always advise my sellers, let's put in that there's a potential to purchase turnkey. Let's price it appropriately. Please have an idea in mind what that property, the contents is worth to you, and whether you're going to consider including it or not. That is a conversation I have with my sellers right on the onset as we're putting together the listing paperwork.
And you brought something up that's very interesting, because I was looking at another house there the other day where the agent put it on for this crazy number. I don't know where it came from, of $675. And they actually had an offer come in for $675, but it didn't go together. So the vendors thought, well, that's kind of disappointing. It didn't go together. We had an offer for $675. So I said to them, you need to get the house appraised, removing myself from the equation, because I don't want to get into the he said, she said. House came in appraised at $400,000. I looked at the appraisal and I said, this appraiser was reaching. I mean, he was obviously trying to get the highest number possible, because that was probably what the people ordering, the sellers, told the appraiser to do. And he did his job. He did a great job at it. But when I did my CMA, comprehensive market analysis, which is what the agents do, I came in around 346. So I said to the vendors, I said, it's fine and dandy that you had people writing an offer for 675. But I said to them, the next step is going to be, assuming there's a mortgage, which most of the time there is, especially in this price range, they're going to the bank. And then what are they going to do? They're going to order one or more appraisals. And if it's insured by CMHC, Canadian Home Mortgage Corporation, they may call a separate appraiser as well, which would all come in at or below the 400, which would put, what's the technical word in real estate? The kibosh on the deal.
Yes.
So your house has to appraise.
Yeah, there's...
Unless they're paying cash.
For sure. If you're a seller listening, it is not the buyer's responsibility to pay off your credit card debt and perhaps pay for your vacation and do all of those things. Yes, you may want X amount of dollars, but we've just sabotaged the buyer's ability because it's not going to appraise at that, which also then frustrates you. Maybe that's why there's private for sale signs, because maybe some agents just tell sellers what they want to hear, and then they have to go in and break and shatter dreams. I don't know where these people got their number from. I don't even know how it would have appraised with the appraiser at that such an inflated price.
They had a dartboard.
So that's a dartboard appraisal.
Dartboard appraisal. You seem to really like these agents that take photographs of documents that need to be included or should be included with listings. And these photographs are usually on a wall with, what's that old?
Cork board?
No, what's that old wall? Can't even remember the name of it. Used to see it in cottages like 40 years ago.
Like the press board?
That will come to me. Regardless of that, you'll see agents taking pictures of documents, or their clients are taking pictures of these documents and attaching them to listings. I do that extremely rarely. If there's a survey that's stapled to a wall, you may take a picture of it because you can't really remove it without tearing it. It's been there for decades. But for the most part, it's probably not a good practice, is it?
No. Can I ask, how many times have you come across a survey stapled to a wall?
Patty, that is a great question. It happened to me on Thursday, 2 days ago. I opened the electrical panel, which was plywood.
Okay.
So it wasn't a wall, it was a door. And there's the survey I was looking for. So I took a picture of it.
Okay. I was just going to say, I've not come across that before.
You can take a look at this cottage. It's beautiful. It's under $400,000 on the water, meticulously maintained, 3-bedroom, 2-bathrooms with a metal roof, completely updated. This can be yours, complete with the survey. Staple to the door of the electrical panel.
Okay. It is a pet peeve of mine to see pictures of documents. In fact, I have even seen this week combing through many MLS listings for a few clients of mine where they've used their primary picture is a picture of an ortho mat. And you can see the table under this ortho mat picture. It is a picture to try to sell this MLS listing, this PEI property. I do not think it's professional. I think some lawyers think realtors are baboons because we don't do our business on a higher professional level. I think if you want to be looked at as a professional, get a scanner app. There's so many free scanner apps. I think even phones, pictures can take scans of documents and turn it into a PDF professional looking document instead of a picture of your property or of your survey or document.
I've even seen and had agents, and these are agents that have been around for a long time, send me pictures of purchase and sales.
There's just no reason for that today.
No, there isn't. Get a scanner or use a scanner app. We use Scanner Pro, don't we?
Yes, and to come full circle, maybe you should be asking your brokerage to what kind of education training do they provide?
On scanning documents.
On scanning documents. You had a funny story. You used to have an agent, I think, at your office. Yes, you did. Who used to print off documents and...
Oh.
And then scan the document.
And then throw the document out.
Yeah, so that they could be emailed to him as a PDF, so then he could send it to his clients.
I have no comment on that kind of stupidity. Particularly since that machine, you could just push a button, it would scan it to your email. But they would print out the cut sheet, scan the cut sheet, throw the cut sheet in the garbage.
Yeah, it's crazy the stuff that happened.
And do it in color. So it cost us $1 a page back then. Contract signing. I see you've had some problems with clients not signing the contract properly or agents not putting little boxes where contracts need to be signed and or initialed.
We have at the bottom of every page, you need to be at least initialing. There are other areas that need to be signed as accepted and...
Rejected, counteroffer, and a purchase
approving.
And sale.
Absolutely. But the bottom of every page should be initialed as an acknowledgement that you've seen this page within the contract agreement. I'm just going to tell my buyer clients, and even not just my buyer clients, but a buyer or seller out there listening, if you notice that your agent missed a box, it's okay because we're working together as a team. for you to kind of go back and say, was I supposed to sign the bottom of page 4 or the bottom of page 8? Because there is a spot that says initials, but you didn't populate. This is if you're doing electronic signatures and initialing. It's okay to go back and call your agent out. In fact, they'd probably appreciate it. Sometimes we get really busy, or they're doing it on their phone and the contract is so small and we have to drag these little boxes everywhere in order to, you know, put the initials and that on them. So work together with your realtor, you know, make sure that all your pages are initialed and signed. It's just in the best interest of everyone involved.
However, every page does not need to be initialed on the bottom just because it says initial here. If it's been signed or initialed somewhere else on that page, it just makes it look neater and cleaner.
If there's a box, it does. Okay, I have a question for you, Michael. Where it says initial and your client's initial, but it doesn't state witness, should you be witnessing your client's initials?
Is this electronic or is this in person?
This is in person.
I don't think you need to witness an initial, but I probably would if it was in person. You wouldn't do it digitally because you don't know where they are and you're not really witnessing anything other than you're receiving the document.
For sure, yeah.
Technically speaking, I suppose it's a good idea to witness the initial.
Yeah, you should be witnessing every spot that your client has signed or initialed within a contract agreement to say, I witnessed this person did initial this page.
Since you're trying to trip me up here, sorry about the car telling us it's going to shut down. If it says sign here, you've got a bunch of lines that say sign signature. Can I just initial that? And is it legally binding?
So my concrete brain says it needs to be signed. It needs
no,
a full signature.
Absolutely not. According to more than one lawyer's opinion, just to piss you off, I'm going to initial anywhere it says sign, and anywhere it says initial, I'm going to sign it, and it's still legally binding. This has been brought up at a number of different real estate meetings, including an association meeting.
If you do not have anywhere within a contract, if you're going to do what you do, and that's test limits and see what you can and can't get away with, if they initialed the entire contract and didn't sign it anywhere, is that still considered legally binding? They didn't sign the contract. They've just initialed everything.
Say that question again. So they're initialing rather than signing?
Correct.
It's binding. And it should be witnessed if it's in person. If it's digital, it doesn't need to be.
Okay.
I still debate whether digital signatures and initials are legitimate, but people seem to have accepted them. And all the really super legally binding stuff is done at the lawyer's office on conveyance anyway. But I just thought I'd get into that trivia today. There are some agents that have some form of mental issue that if you do have an initial spot and you don't need it because the page, and you know the page I'm talking about, I think it's the agency disclosure. You've got a signature, you've got an initial, but then there's another initial on the bottom. So purposely, I won't get that initial just because it drives some people nuts.
Yeah, it's initial, signature, initial, which is completely redundant. And yes, I do know there are some that they'll pull all their hair out just over the stress of, you're missing an initial, this offer is not complete, even though there is already a signature on that page.
Let's close it down. This is enough chaos for one day.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in and listening to the Michael and Patty Show. Like I said earlier, we appreciate you listening. I am very impressed with those who are choosing to listen to better educate themselves and prepare themselves for their buying and selling process. This information is invaluable, and I can guarantee will help make the process easier for you.
Everybody have a great day, and thanks again for listening. Bye for now.
Bye for now.